Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today combines his interest in photography, history, and cemetery architecture to tell stories in stone. Douglas Keister has authored more than 35 books, and his field guide to cemeteries in the New York area earned him a spot on CBS TV's national show Sunday Morning. For his sixth book on the subject of cemeteries, he traveled to Paris to photograph the graves and research the content. In this new book, Stories in Stone Paris, he tells the stories of the residents of some of the most well-known eternal resting places in Paris. Douglas Keister, welcome.
Always good to be here.
And I did say eternal resting places, but is that really true?
Well, I think so. I mean, most of them are there for the duration, although in Paris people aren't always in the same spot forever.
Because they just might get moved.
They get moved. They have something there called concessions, which is you buy a concession for a certain period of time, 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, 50 years, or in perpetuity. So if you only buy a short one, they dig you up and put your bones in a bag and take you to the ossuary, which means bone room, essentially.
Well, speaking of that, somebody considers the best attraction in Paris the catacombs.
I'd certainly not on, you know, the proverbial A-list, but people that go there always have a great story. I mean, it is incredible. There are millions of Parisians underground in the catacombs. Really an incredible, incredible place.
Well, here's what one visitor said. We arrived at the entrance to the catacombs 40 minutes before the doors opened at 10 a.m., but we still had to wait nearly 2 hours to get in because the line was already around the block. And this person even wondered if some of those people in the back of the line even got there by the end of the day.
Yeah, and, oh, it's enormously popular. When the last time I went there, I got there early and I was at the front of the line. And then in order to get the pictures I wanted, I raced ahead of everybody else. So I had, you know, pictures without any people in them. Although, you know, I did wait and then get pictures with people. But it's quite an adventure. It's not for the claustrophobic, certainly, and it's not for the squeamish. But I find it fascinating.
Well, what I did do, because the line was so long, I watched a video of somebody walking through. And the part that seemed rather spacious. It's still not for claustrophobes, I don't think, but I probably would suspect that spiral staircase at the start, walking down, what, 60 feet?
It's 139 steps down, so it's about 60 feet. Not quite as many steps back up because it slants a little bit going in an uphill direction, but very, very slight.
Well, when I saw that line, my husband and I decided we would just walk on to Montparnasse, which is a cemetery nearby.
Right, right,
it's very close
right,
to it. Very close. And in fact, when we got there, there was a German couple who were wishing they had a map to guide them at Montparnasse. And we asked them about the catacombs. They said, yeah, we waited in that line a while and then we gave up. And so I suspect there would be even more visitors to the catacombs if that line weren't so long.
Yeah, yeah. And they only allow a certain amount of people down there at one time. That's part of the issue. But it's fascinating. You know, the catacombs came into existence because in the end of the 18th century, they cleaned out all of the cemeteries and transported all the bones to an abandoned gypsum mine, which became the catacombs.
In fact, reading the reasons they transferred them, it was just, it was pretty unhealthy, to say the least.
People were buried in, you know, to put it mildly, I guess, you know, kind of like an open pit garbage dump. I mean, 1,500 people in a grave, and it just became, you know, a mess. And that's how, because of that, they outlawed the city cemeteries and the graveyards and the what are called God's Acres around the churches. And that's how they established the modern-day cemetery. And Père Lachaise, which is the one most people go to, was the first kind of formal cemetery in the world, and certainly the first what's called garden cemetery in the world.
Well, whenever there's a first, and particularly regarding something like death, how do you talk people into saying, well, we've got this new idea here that we want you to participate in? How do you convince people?
Well, that's a great, great question, because what they did was they started this brand new concept of kind of a bucolic burial ground, and it was based on English estates. So people didn't clamor right away to it. They still wanted to be buried in the traditional God's Acres. So what the what the developers of Pere Lachaise did in a move that would gladden any modern-day marketer's heart was they moved in some long-dead Parisians. and so it made it more attractive, you know. So, you know, it's kind of that location, location, location. I mean, if you were to move in, you know, Michael Jackson into some cemetery and made his grave kind of accessible, it would attract lots and lots of people. And that's what happened. The developers of Pere Lachaise moved in Heloise and Abelard, which they died in the 12th century in 1142 and 1164. And they were a lot of people here in the States don't know who they are, but they were kind of the Romeo and Juliet of France, except they were real. And so they moved them in, and they moved in Molière and La Fontaine, some dignitaries, you might say. And then it became the place to be buried.
My guest is Douglas Keister, and his newest field guide to cemeteries is Paris Cemeteries, Stories in Stone Paris, and the cemeteries and their residents. And we were talking about Pere Lachaise. And if you go there, I really enjoyed the atmosphere there because you have things like crows, and the sky was rather overcast. And I thought, boy, this is it. This is a quintessential cemetery.
Yeah, it's kind of you might say, a cemetery with a capital C. And it's all everything we kind of think of as a cemetery. And also, it's sort of, I mean, in a way, it's kind of like an urban wilderness. I mean, you're in the middle of Paris, and you walk in there, and it's all, you
know. Lots of trees.
Lots and lots of trees, and it's kind of hilly and little windy roads. And even though nowadays there's lots and lots of people wandering around, it's still, you can go off the path a little bit, and you're just completely there's nothing around you except graves, and there's no people. And of course, you know, it's been around for over 200 years, so you have that kind of forlorn atmosphere, and the crows are cawing, and it's just, of course, I love that sort of thing. And other people go, yeah. So, when you go to Paris, as you know, everything costs money. The cemeteries are free, so it's a great, you know, respite and from not just the crowds, but having to pay for everything.
So you wander around and you come to this Gothic structure, and that's where Heloise and Abelard are. This Gothic,
this
architecture, very appropriate, like you would expect in a cemetery.
And their grave was it's really kind of it's called a castle of grief, Castrum Dolores, and it was built from the stones where she was in a convent. So you know, he imported all that. It has a lot of historical value, you might say. And of course, nearby to Heloise and Abelard is Jim Morrison.
Well, I'll tell you, Doug, when I was there, and I'll do anything researching for a book. So I go there, and I have your book includes a map of the cemetery in the back of it. So I had your map with me, and I don't think I was even looking at it, but a family actually came up and asked me where Jim Morrison's grave was. Yeah. So I said, well, you go to, it's kind of hard to give directions because these paths are so winding.
Right.
And so I tried to go up here and turn right, and then shortly this young Japanese couple came by, they, by that time, were very close. And so I was able to point to it. I said, you see that one with the roses on it? You're that close. Just walk around there to your left, and you'll be there at Jim Morrison's.
I would say that 90% of the people that asked for directions asked for Jim Morrison. And when I was there just a week ago, I had what I call my photographer's costume on, which is my vest, and I got the camera, and I got the map. So, you know, everybody's coming up to me asking where Jim is. I don't think only one or two people asked me where something else was.
Well, even before I left for the cemetery, a young woman at the hotel, I told her where I was going to Pere Lachaise, and she says, oh, I went there just yesterday. And you know what grave she went to? Jim Morrison.
Jim Morrison, of course, yeah.
And but I was asked about another, that same Japanese couple, a little bit later after they had. Now, Jim Morrison's grave has a barricade around
it. It's the only grave in the whole cemetery that has a barrier.
Barricade.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, barricade around it.
And it no longer has, because you're photographing your book, you'd have to photograph his gravesite at different times because it has changed.
Yeah. When they first put it up, well, it was rather simple. And then they put a bust up of Jim. And, of course, it attracted lots of graffiti. And then all the tombs around it attracted lots and lots of graffiti. Eventually, somebody stole the bust. And then they put another bust up. And then the cemetery decided, no, it's just – so they took it. I know where it is, but it's in a warehouse in another cemetery.
So the photograph in your book, this iconic bust of Jim Morrison, is not what you can see if you go
no,
here today.
No, what you see – well, I have, you know, three different pictures of that – of Jim Morrison's grave. And one of them is that bust. I was giving a lecture last year, actually, in San Francisco, and I was kind of bemoaning the fact that I didn't have a picture of Jim Morrison's bust, and somebody in the audience said they did.
That's how you got that.
That's how I got
that
picture.
My guest is Douglas Keister, and his newest book, Field Guide to Cemeteries, is Stories in Stone, Paris. And this Japanese couple, after they found Jim Morrison's grave, they came back and asked me about another one. And at first I thought, because her French wasn't very good, she was asking about Champollion. And I was excited about him because of his child prodigy, the Rosetta Stone.
Right.
Tell about him.
Champollion is actually not far from Jim Morrison's. There's a big circle kind of in the middle of the cemetery, and he has a obelisk, sort of an obelisk, and he was,
which would be appropriate for Egypt.
Yeah, and he was the one of the discoverers of the Rosetta Stone. So he's very, very much revered.
Well, that's one reason I thought maybe that's who she was asking about, because it is near Jim Morrison's. But she was actually asking about a musician.
Yes, Chopin.
Right. In fact, my husband said, no, she's saying Chopin.
Yeah.
So anyway, I was able to show her on your map how to get there. And his is an interesting story, too.
Yeah, well, his tomb is actually – one of the funniest things about his tomb is it has kind of a cameo, what we consider a cameo of him. And it doesn't say Frederick Chopin. It says Fred Chopin.
I know. When I saw that, I thought, oh, my, that changes my image of Chopin.
But if you look closer,
calling Fred.
Actually, there's a little Frederick in there, but the main words say Fred Chopin. And his – not all of him is there. His heart is actually in where he was born in Poland.
Yeah.
But Chopin is probably –
but his father was French, though.
Yes, yes.
But people would say he's more Polish than Poland.
Right. And his grave is probably the second most visited. And before Jim Morrison died, Chopin's was the most visited grave. And it always, always has flowers on it. It's a very, very popular – more with the French people than the tourists.
In fact, my little survey, that brief moment, it shows that what you just said to be true. That first she asked about Jim Morrison, and then she asked about Chopin.
And then the next one is usually Oscar Wilde. So it's funny because all three of those are technically not French people. You know,
one thing in your book is so many people, the name we know them by was not the name they were born with.
Right. Like Marcel Marceau, he's there, and his... You know better than I do how to – his original name. But his tombstone is really interesting. He was Jewish. And
that's why a lot of them had to change their name.
Yes.
They felt they should for their own protection.
Yeah. His tombstone is interesting because it has Bip's signature on it, which is the character.
His character.
As well as Marcel Marceau's signature embedded in the tombstone.
Well, I love your – paragraphs about these people because, for example, in Jim Morrison, you say he went to Paris in 1971 and never left.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And then Marcel Marceau, you include the fact that he was influenced by Charlie Chaplin, his character that he did, his miming, and that his character then influenced Michael Jackson's Moonwalk.
Yeah, all those little connections I always find fascinating.
And also why Marcel Marceau became a mime.
Yeah.
Because of being needing to get children quiet.
Yeah.
And what a wonderful way to do that.
Yeah. Now, there are so many stories. And that's kind of what
I'm
trying
to do. And the only time he spoke was he was the only spokesman.
The movie Silent Movie was the only speaking role in the
in Marcel Marceau.
And he said, no. By the way, I mean, just as an aside, you know, the book isn't just about Père Lachaise. There's many other cemeteries that are in the book as well as other burial places.
Well, you mentioned Napoleon.
Yes.
And Napoleon is not buried in Père Lachaise.
Nope. Napoleon is – he's got his own –
His own. That's right.
Well, there's two kind of dignitary – burial places in Paris. One is Les Invalides, where the military people are buried. And Napoleon, of course, is center stage, and he's buried in one of
them. Oh, I'll say. Boy.
Yeah, it's quite – he's buried inside of, I think, six or seven different caskets, kind of like those Russian boxes, you know, with the – and then there is the Pantheon. And the Pantheon is where, you know, people like Rousseau are buried, the Curies, both of the Curies, Marie Curie and Pierre Curie.
The scientists.
Voltaire. So that's where they are buried. So there's more than one burial spot in Paris. And then if you go – when they established all of these cemeteries after they emptied out, you know, the other burial grounds – they established the Cemetery of the North, the South, the East, and the West. And Père Lachaise was the East, and then the North was Montmartre. And that is where the artists tend to be buried. You have Degas is there, a very, very famous singer, Dalida. Nijinsky is there. So it tends to be more of an artistic. And so each cemetery kind of has its own flavor as who the residents of that cemetery are.
Well, you know what I enjoyed, too, was that people who ride the Metro see all these names that are just names, and then when they read your field guide and they see the name, oh, that's why that Metro stop is named that.
Right, right, yeah.
And I used to wonder early when I would look at a plan, in English we call it a map of Paris, and see Haussmann, and well, that's not a French name, but I thought it was interesting you made the connection of what Haussmann did at Napoleon's request, and now I know... And
well,
people who read your book know why Paris has such wide boulevards, and why was that?
Well, he designed them, but there's kind of two things. One is, of course, to make everything more accessible, but one was also to break up the little neighborhoods where all the revolutionaries were, because with all this kind of intricacies of these little neighborhoods with the little streets and things, people could hide out really easily. But when they introduced the big boulevards, they couldn't do that as much. They couldn't kind of squirrel away, you know.
And it's easy to barricade a little narrow street.
Yeah.
You can't barricade the Champs-Élysées.
So,
there's no way to do that.
So it's always kind of an ulterior motive. There's also in Père Lachaise is a thing called the Communards Wall, where the communists were all mowed down. And a lot of Holocaust memorials, too, in Père Lachaise.
Well, you mentioned singers, for example, Edith Piaf.
Yes.
Is very popular still to this day.
She is, yeah. And some people we don't know about. You know, Dalida is one that I mentioned. We don't know of her, but she was the first singer to ever have a diamond record. You know, you have gold records, platinum records, and diamond records. And she has a magnificent grave that people don't see too much because it's kind of off to one side, but it is just spectacular. And Serge Gainsbourg is another one. He's very revered. There was a song that came out in the late 60s, early 70s called Je T'aime that was banned in many, many places. The Pope banned it. And, of course, they said he was the best marketing person they had because once he banned
it, everybody – Once you ban something, everybody wants to hear
everybody
it.
Everybody wanted it. So.
Well, you mentioned some of these people that – and when you're reading along in the book and you come to a name maybe that's not familiar, but then you read it, that's the person that did this or that. And it's always so interesting. For example, one guy sculpted, he was a sculptor, sculpted his own statue on his grave.
Yeah, wrote.
And this was Jean Carrière.
Yeah, Jean Carrière, who was a model maker. And so he's.
And holding in his hand.
Yeah, he's holding in his hand a little model. And it pretty much looks like him, almost for sure. And there's another guy that's an actor that is holding the face of his wife. And it's really – it's kind of creepy looking. But it says – in French, of course, it says, they marveled at the journey that took him to the end of life. It's really very, very poetic.
Speaking of creepy, one of the scariest markers is this figure – this sculptor of a man.
Rodenbach, yeah.
Yes, George Rodenbach. And he is – to me, he's climbing out of the grave, and depends on your point of view, but I think he's climbing out.
Yeah, if you look at it real close, it looks like he's climbing out, and he's kind of pushing up this big rock, and he's got his arm extended and a flower on it, like he's trying to get out of the grave. It's very, very interesting.
But then there's the Art Nouveau.
Yes.
You've got a gravestone that's shaped like a boot. And I was interested in the architect who designed that, because all of us who have seen the Paris Metropolitan.
Right. All the metro marker. Stations have that kind of sweeping Art Nouveau. And what people don't realize a lot is that architects that designed buildings and things like that also designed tombs. And so, you know, he designed this wonderful kind of a boot-shaped, shoe-shaped tomb that's very Art Nouveau, and it's way tucked in the side of the cemetery. People don't see it, but he's the guy that did all the metro stations or the metro station entrances.
Hector Guimard was his name.
Yes.
And it's interesting because you're an architect, you design a building. Well, people might decide, well, let's tear this building down. In fact, they've torn down his buildings, but,
right, but
they don't.
But in the cemetery. In the cemetery, stuff is preserved for, well, hopefully forever. Whereas, you know, in the city, of course, things get torn down.
So if you're a fan of architecture,
go to the cemetery.
Go to the cemetery.
You can see a lot more in a few minutes in a cemetery than you can all day in a city.
In fact, you use a word in your book, taphophile, and I've been thinking that it will tell people what that is.
Oh, taphophile is a lover of cemeteries.
And I think it wasn't that originally that you got into this line of photography. It was your love of architecture.
Yes, I had done all these books on the architecture of Victorians and bungalows, and I stumbled into a cemetery one day and wondered if anybody had ever done a book on cemetery architecture, and they hadn't. So I
and
did
there was a niche that you could fill.
I did a book called Going Out in Style.
And so you have the skills for photographer, because that we're talking about these markers, but it's nothing like actually seeing these beautiful color pictures. You have a lot of these color pictures in here.
Yeah, it was 300 photographs of that.
300 photographs in your field guide. And so that helps to know what you're looking for. But then you have these stories, like you tell about the world's oldest pet cemetery.
Right, yeah, and it's across the Seine, and it's where Rin Tin Tin is buried. And people are always amazed at that. Rin Tin Tin, wait a minute.
He's American.
Yeah, he's American. But no, he was a World War One soldier in World War One. Picked him up and his sister, Rin Tin Tin's sister, and took him to Hollywood and made him movie stars. And then when Rin Tin Tin died, they took him back to Paris.
And he's buried there.
And he's buried in Paris.
In the dog cemetery.
Yeah, the world's oldest. Well, that's what they say. You know, some people might argue that some stuff in Egypt that's a lot older where pets were buried. But
well, and then some graves like Jim Morrison's might have lipstick on them. But there's one that I wondered maybe people now wouldn't, but would want to desecrate, and that is Marie Antoinette.
Yeah.
Villainous.
What's funny is Marie Antoinette, she's in Saint-Denis. All the royals are buried in Saint-Denis, or they think they are. It's kind of hard to tell when things are thousands of years old. And what's kind of funny about her statue is that you can touch it. You know, most of that stuff, you know, it's in a museum or something. You know, it's behind
of the famous people.
Of the famous people, yeah, behind the little red velvet ropes. But no, you can go up and touch it. They don't say anything about it. So it's good.
And so Marie Antoinette, of course, is famous for a line that she – our English translation isn't exactly right.
And she never said it. She never ever said
and
it.
And I had heard that what she did was let them eat brioche.
Right.
And then you say, well, no, she probably didn't say that.
No, she didn't say it. They just, it was the people that were the propagandists used that line to kind of, you know, market stuff against.
This is something she would say.
Yeah, she would say it. But they traced it back much, much before her time.
My guest is Douglas Keister, and his new book, Field Guide to Cemeteries. He went to Paris and photographed the markers, the cemeteries there, principally Père Lachaise, since it's the largest one. But what I appreciated, being the Francophile that I am, is that you, when you gave the French, you included the accent marks.
Yes.
And I so appreciated that.
Oh.
And in your book, you acknowledge that you had some assistance from French speakers.
I mean, it's a very, very long story. We don't have time for it. But I met this woman who is my angel in Paris. And she teaches, her name is Marie Bellamine. And she teaches English. She's French and teaches it in Paris. And she helped me with the book. And I just recently went back there to thank her for it. And I dedicated the book to her.
Yeah, because that was a lot of work to put in. Well, because it's chock full of information, but also you're dealing with two languages.
Yes, yes. The book is, you know, 300 color photographs and 60,000 words.
Well, we've talked about how these cemeteries were established and which ones the catacombs aren't even a cemetery, but you can see a lot of bones there. And would you say that Père Lachaise is the one that most people head for and want to visit?
Yeah, people want to visit Père Lachaise. It's very easy to get to. You take the Metro to Père Lachaise. If you can't figure that out, well, you probably shouldn't be there. So,
well, one person was buried in a coffin that she was already familiar with.
Sarah Bernhardt. She slept in a coffin. She's an actress.
This is while she's alive now.
Yes, yeah. And when she was buried, she kind of had this little tomb built that in the center of it is a granite coffin.
Well, when I used to have students, college students that were in theater majors, they were very interested in Sarah Bernhardt.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they were motivated to study French.
There's a lot of women in Père Lachaise that are very, very interesting women. They're not... what is it called? They're not wallflowers. They're very, very interesting.
Well, and then some people are, well, for example, Oscar Wilde was famous for writing a poem called The Sphinx.
Yes.
And they took that as inspiration for his tombstone.
Yeah.
And just briefly describe, how would you depict a sphinx? It's not like we think of this paws there.
It's kind of this, it's an allegorical figure, and it's kind of like a flying man sort of thing. And
Very distinctive.
Very, very distinctive, and it gets a lot of attention. It gets so much attention that a lot of people, men and women, would put lipstick on and kiss the grave all over it, and it was just covered in lipstick, and the lipstick started deteriorating the stone.
In fact, you have a photograph to show before it got in that shape, and then while it was covered in lipstick, which was destroying the stone.
Yes, and then 2 years ago, they put a glass barrier about halfway up. Of course, now everybody just kisses the glass barrier and writes all sorts of notes on it. But Oscar he famously said when he was dying, either the wallpaper goes or I go.
And he did.
He did.
So in your book, you have to have three photographs of his grave marker
show the progression.
In different stages.
Yeah.
It's developed.
And it's very, 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 very popular destination.
And we didn't exactly say why, because of the fact that Oscar Wilde was famous for writing The Importance of Being Earnest, but you tell in your book why other reasons why his grave is a popular spot. So we'll leave some surprises for the readers.
There.
A lot of surprises, a lot of interesting information in your book, and it's beautiful. I really enjoyed that you've got... The pages of it look very French.
Yeah. I credit Gibbs Smith Publisher for doing a fantastic job on the design of the book.
Really great book. It's been such a pleasure talking to you. My guest has been Douglas Keister. His newest book is Stories in Stone Paris, A Field Guide to Paris Cemeteries and Their Residents. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, kcho.org. I'm Nancy Wiegman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.